Wisconsin Eye is in Milwaukee. We're at the Public Policy Forum. We are considering a major study put out by the Forum, Pulling Back the Curtain, Assessing the Needs of Major Arts, Cultural, Recreational, and Entertainment Assets in Milwaukee County. To discuss this report, I want to thank to my left Rob Henkin, President of the Public Policy Forum, Mark Niehaus, President of the Milwaukee Symphony Orchestra, and Tim Shee, President, Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. Gentlemen, thanks very much for this. Rob, let's start with you. Why do Pulling Back the Curtain study on culture, arts, entertainment? I mean, your organization does some heavy lifting on major studies. Why this one? Why this subject?
Well, Steve, this conversation has actually been going on in our community for quite some time. I think there's been a feeling, particularly over the last 10, 15 years, as Milwaukee County government's financial struggles have really begun to emerge and cause some real questions about the county's ability to use its local resources to take care of these very important arts and cultural institutions in the park. So we've been talking about that issue, the fact that the county property tax levy resources are stretched because of a combination of sort of flat state and federal aid and some of the very fierce cost pressures the county has faced, in part because of some of its fringe benefits problems. So the question has emerged, is county government able to properly take care of these institutions and to have them be what we as a community want them to be? If it is no longer able to do so, then what are our options? And so I think we wanted to come in and really try to define what is the need here. And we also thought it was important to look beyond the county-owned institutions to really look at our broad array of arts, cultural, and entertainment assets and try to determine if indeed we are going to do something different in terms of the county institutions, might that something different also extend to other institutions and organizations?
Thank you. Mark, you're here because you run one of the specific organizations. The Symphony Orchestra's website said, keep the music flowing. Can you talk about the fiscal issues with the orchestra, sir?
Sure. I'm the president of Milwaukee Symphony, but for 15 years before I became the president, I was the principal trumpet of the orchestra. So I have a passion for my organization and for Milwaukee. Even though I'm wearing a gray suit, I'm a passionate artist. The symphony has had this kind of cyclical budget crisis every 3 to 5 years. And we're not alone. Many of the other performing arts organizations in our town have had this this cycle of over-dependence on individual philanthropy. Very few of our organizations have endowments that are properly sized for us. And we also compete for the same space, the Marcus Center. And not only do the ballet, the opera, and the symphony compete with each other for the space, we also compete with a Broadway series in the Marcus Center as well. So we have one building that's trying to serve 4 different constituencies, and the building is also in itself in need of repair.
Well, very quick follow-up. Is the survival at the orchestra at stake here?
It is.
It literally is.
Right now, we're in the middle of a $5 million campaign, which fills a budget miss last year of $2 million and fills a $3 million hole this year, but takes us to a sustainable model next year. We've done a tremendous amount of change internally with our contract with the musicians, as well as the program offerings. One of the things we've done to respond to this scheduling issue we have at the Marcus Center and competing with the other groups is we've gone to a non-contiguous season. So we're gonna not have a 40-week season in a row. The orchestra's actually gonna go dark for certain weeks, and then we're going to play weeks further out into June or earlier into September in order to capture more weeks in the Marcus Center, which will be an earned revenue boost for us. But that's us adjusting, and you know, there's only so much we can do internally to solve this problem.
You have a huge stake in this issues raised in this report.
We do. The support for the symphony, we are in many ways, as I hate to make a analogy to the arena, but we're the Bucks in the Marcus Center. Okay. We're the largest tenant, and we're not sure the building can survive without us, and we're at risk.
Tim, thanks for your patience. You, MMAC deals with huge issues. Schooling, public education, K-12, transportation, infrastructure. Yet you're here on a panel, what the report calls quality of life issues. Why?
Well, the simple answer is it's about economic development. It's about growing the region's prosperity. And Milwaukee is in a global race for talent. We are not going to grow our population fast enough to support the kind of jobs that are being created here. So this, to me, is all about making Milwaukee stickier. And that's making this region attractive to retaining the talent we have here and attracting new talent in that we're going to need to fuel economic growth. And so when you do that, one of the things you look at is quality of place or quality of life. And the attributes that are being talked about here today go to the heart of the arts, entertainment, and cultural assets that make Milwaukee a great place to live, work, and play. And so that's the tie to our interest.
Well, are they as important, some of the arts and culture? Is his symphony as important as the Bucks and the Brewers, or just the whole area of culture and art?
Well, you could look at it two ways. You could measure importance on the basis of volume, how many people come to an event. But I think it is the whole mix of arts, entertainment, and culture that make up Milwaukee as a great place to live, work, and play. And so we're not trying to pit the baseball fan against the symphony fan, and in that case, maybe the same person. We're trying to say that this whole mix of cultural and entertainment assets are what add to Milwaukee's value. So losing the symphony is, in my view, as painful as losing the Bucks. Even though the attendance may be different, what we're talking about are assets that speak to our ability to be a well-rounded region.
Mark, I didn't mean to pitch you against the Bucks and the
Brewers.
No,
it's totally fine.
But
this value judgment is made all the time, and I actually am a huge baseball fan, and I love comparing baseball to the symphony because there's more similarities than you would think. You're going to have to check my numbers. I think about 600,000 people or so went to see the Milwaukee Bucks this year. Over 200,000 people came to see the Milwaukee Symphony this year. Our annual budget is about 2 basketball players.
Oh, really?
So probably 2 not very good ones.
Well, yeah, exactly, or 1 really good relief pitcher. You know, so if you want to do a dollars and cents comparison for sort of people in seats versus budget, we do incredibly well. Also, a dollar invested in the arts comes back to the community more than a dollar invested in sports. Because the Milwaukee Symphony and the Marcus Center is not we're not designed to hoard revenue, right? When you go to the Miller Park, they capture all parking, they capture all concessions, they capture the ticket, they capture selling the t-shirts. So it's more of a contained organization. So there's more, in my opinion, there's a little bit more spreading out of the resources in the arts.
Rob, what surprised you about your study?
You know, I think probably the biggest surprise, Steve, we've talked a lot about the need for operating support. The fact that the parks and the zoo, for example, here in Milwaukee County have had to have reduced maintenance staff over the years that has contributed to a maintenance backlog. These are the issues that have emerged, and when we've had these conversations, it's about trying to somehow boost operating support. I think what we found was that the operating needs were vastly eclipsed by the capital needs. The basic fundamental nuts and bolts, roofs and facades and HVAC systems and so on, that these institutions, whether the county-owned or the privately-owned entities that own their own buildings, this is where the challenges are. This has been a very generous community in terms of philanthropic support for big projects, but there's lots of very small capital needs that simply aren't being taken care of.
You score the capital needs for publicly-owned buildings at $246 million. But let's break that down. The parks need $82 million. The zoo needs $68. Marcus Center needs $37. And your study says this: the future funding of these projects is, quote, critical for their futures. Really? Are we talking about survival here or scaling back in these programs? Parks, $82 million, Zoo, $68, Marcus Center, $37. Excuse me for interrupting.
No, that's fine. I think that one of the things that we are trying to bring out in this report is the very strong linkage between taking care of facility needs and giving these organizations the wherewithal to balance their operating budgets on an annual level, and in an ideal world, even wean themselves from public operating support. So I think there is a connection. When you say is an entity's survival in question because it has a building with a leaky roof, The leaky roof is having an impact not only on the asset itself, but it's also having an impact on attendance, and it's having an impact on earned revenues. And so they're all linked. I don't know that we have seen any to the point of the symphony where clearly, and we came in and did a very broad assessment and a very brief one, but an independent assessment that, that certainly verified what Mark is saying. I don't think that we saw any institutions that are either county-owned or the other privately owned that we looked at that are in that dire an operating condition. But clearly, long-term, if we don't figure out a way to take care of these facilities, then we have to question whether some of these organizations are worth having.
And your language in the study says this about Milwaukee County's ability to maintain these facilities. It is highly questionable. Milwaukee County government has the capacity to address this projected need of $246 million. And you also point out that the $246 million projected need is double the $103 million that was spent in 2008 and 13.
Yes, so can we say that definitively? No. But can we take a look at all of the other cost pressures facing Milwaukee County government, all of the mandated programs that by necessity have to take priority over, over cultural institutions and parks? And that's where, and we look at the county's own limitations in terms of how much money it can borrow every year to take care of its capital needs. That's a very daunting number, and it's hard to imagine that the county could do it alone. The other wild card here is, to what extent is the private sector able and willing to step up to help these county-owned institutions? If indeed they are, that would help the county-owned institutions, but then a related question to that is, what about the symphony? What about all of the other arts and cultural and entertainment assets in town, and would that limit their ability to then help out there?
I want to ask Mark and Tim, do you agree with the premise that the answer here to these funding questions is not the county of Milwaukee because of the other pressures on county spending? Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I would look at it from this perspective. The economy functions on a regional basis. But regionalism is an unnatural act, or I've come to believe that. people just want to look at their communities in a little smaller way than I think we need to do if we're going to be competitive. So all these assets draw on the region's economy. They entertain and provide culture to people all across the region. And so I would like to see us look at a regional solution. The economy of the metropolitan Milwaukee area produces $4 billion a year in state tax revenue. And we think it's a good investment to grow the economy so it can produce more tax revenue so we can do more things. And I think that the arts, entertainment, and culture piece of this is an important part of making this region more attractive.
Mark, you're not asking Mr. Abley to bail out your symphony, are you?
Not right now, no.
Not right now.
He has done wonderful things for our organization. He was our board chair for 6 years and is very passionate about the arts.
But county government is not a long-term answer to the fiscal problems of the symphony.
Not directly. However, the county does support the Marcus Center to the tune of about $1 million a year. And if that diminishes, those costs will be passed on to the tenant groups in the facility.
One thing that really strikes me about this study is the continuum of need. Tim, you're at the heart of the discussion of the expansion of the BMO Harris-Bradley Center and the Convention Center. The projected, the estimated price tag on that is $700 million in the study. On the other end of the continuum is the $2 million capital expansion plan of the Skylight Music Theater. $700 million to $2 million? Wow, that's, give us an update. What's the timeline on a new arena for the Bucks? Now, I realize there's lots of meetings, lots of secret plans. At some point, something's going to come forth, but is Milwaukee going to lose the Bucks? The lease is up as 2017.
Well, let's just go to the first question, and Rob can correct me if I'm wrong, but in the very well-positioned study that the Public Policy Forum produced, those costs are kind of a five-year time horizon. So when we talk about hundreds of millions of dollars of costs, I think we have to look at the time horizon we're talking about making those investments, and then just like, you know, fixing the roof on a house or fixing the basement or doing something like that, you have to look at the longevity. So if we're talking about, to your question, about building a new arena, that's an investment we're looking at over the course of 20 or 30 years. So it is a big sticker number, but it's meant to cover a long time span. I think that while the Bucks tend to get center court on this discussion, it's not because they are more important than the other cultural institutions and entertainment venues. It's because they have a shorter time clock. The Bucks have a lease through 2017. If we don't have a solution in front of this community well in advance of 2017, and the Bucks don't have a new lease, whether it's a current owner or new owner, we are not going to have an NBA team playing here. I think that's plain and simple. So it's just that their needs may be a little more visible and upfront, but we're hoping to use that visibility and leverage to get at some of the other issues that we're talking about that are just as important but don't get the headlines that the Bucks do.
But this community is not going to lose the Bucks, are they?
I mean, if you're asking me the question, I think having an NBA team anchor an entertainment center downtown that draws 1.5 million people is an important part of this discussion, and I hope that we don't make that decision by mistake.
Does the focus on a new arena to keep the Bucks, because their lease is up in 2017, and the NBA said, we are assuming the city of Milwaukee is going to find a new arena, does that pit your symphony needs against the Bucks, Mark?
I don't see this as an either or thing. I see this as an and thing, because this entire discussion is not, we're not focusing on let's build some new amazing crazy thing. We're talking about maintaining what we have. There were visionary people in Milwaukee 10, 15, 20 years ago who built a park system that is fantastic and who started a symphony that is world-renowned and who have built an art museum that is second to none. And it's about, at this point, it's really just about maintaining. And there's not as much excitement around maintaining because you don't see them go away. They don't explode in your face. They just crumble. And then all of a sudden one day, there's no zoo. And I think back to a story when I first started researching these different I know the second part of your study is going to look at the five different models in five different
funding
cities
models, yes.
So I go back to a quote from the mayor of Oklahoma City, and this would have been back in the 80s. I believe it was United Airlines was looking to relocate one of their large maintenance facilities, and Oklahoma City gave them the best deal. You know, like no taxes, free land, free drinks, whatever you want, just bring your large facility here. And the CEO of the airline told the mayor, he says, you know, this is the best deal, but I just can't imagine asking my employees to move to Oklahoma City. And at that point, that was one of the linchpins for them to start on this campaign to make sure that they had a world-class city. Now, we're on the other side of this. We have a world-class city. We have all of these things already. We just need to take care of them. And maybe it's more difficult to sell that. Then we're not going to make some new shiny thing here. We're going to take care of the great things we have.
Rob, you estimated the long-term capital needs of the publicly owned facilities, 246. But you also point out that the privately owned facilities have expansion needs and growth needs. The ballet, $40 million. The Youth Art Center, $16 million. Discovery World and the Rep, $4 million. Skylight Music Theater, $2 million. So talk to me about the difference between the publicly owned county and the privately owned.
Well, there's two unique sets of fundraising challenges here. For the county-owned facilities, the expectation, I think, among community members and the philanthropic community in particular, is that if the county owns the building, the county needs to take care of the basic nuts and bolts repairs and infrastructure maintenance, et cetera. In the case of our zoo, there's about to be a very ambitious long-term master plan announced that could have $80 million worth of projects in it. There, the expectation would be that if the county could possibly come up with half of that, that they are seeking to raise the rest from the private sector. Conversely, when we look at the private sector facilities, of course, they're not looking for county dollars at this point in time to aid with their projects. So they are leaning on their traditional supporters from the philanthropic community. So I think a big unanswered question here is what is the capacity of our philanthropic community here in Milwaukee County and in our region to get these projects done?
But is this philanthropic community going to be asked to contribute to a new arena for the Bucks, to help the symphony? I mean, how much giving capacity is there out there? Tim, what are your thoughts?
You know, I think there's on a per capita basis, if you look at Milwaukee, the metro area nationally, I think we do very well in terms of our philanthropic and corporate support for these events. I mean, if you just look at Milwaukee on the basis of how many professional sports seats there are per capita, we're way above our weight class in that measure. So if the question is specifically for a new downtown entertainment center, I think you're going to get a significant contribution out of the ownership, and I think you'll get a significant contribution out of the private sector. That won't cover the whole nut, but you can look at the art museum, you can look at the fundraising that the Symphony is doing. There's a tremendous capability to give to this community. We're not looking to, you know, to stretch it beyond its means, but I certainly think there's a capacity to do that here.
You were going to answer, Rob, and I. Or go ahead, Mark.
But the message we hear from the philanthropic community is too few people are being relied on for too much individually, and they're questioning the business model of the nonprofit organizations. Are they truly, is the programming getting the people in the seats that it needs to get in the seats, mm-hmm. and are we serving the community the best way we can? And a lot of that has to do with our venue, and so this it's all interconnected.
Rob, I want to ask you about one more thing. You say, and it's a very curious term, so I want to get it right. The $10 million raised annually by UPAF, the United Performing Arts Fund, which supports 38 different programs, and I looked up who they support, because they support the Kenosha and Racine Symphonies. But you say, your study says, that UPAF complicates the need for public funding. Elaborate.
Well, so again, the conversation heretofore in Milwaukee County has really centered around public funding sources for those institutions and organizations that are owned by the public sector. It really hasn't involved the private sector. As we looked at other metro regions across the country, the calculus has been a little different. It hasn't been about, do we need to do something to help these publicly owned assets? It's been about what type of a broader arts, cultural, and entertainment set of assets do we want in our community? And so what type of public funding should go to support the broad array, whether they're managed and administered by private nonprofit organizations or by county government itself? In looking at that question and thinking about it here, we have to take a look at what are we currently doing. Would the availability of public funds through some type of a competitive grants program for the broader array of cultural institutions in Milwaukee, would that help in terms of UPAF and its ability to privately support these organizations? Or if you're having an increased public funding source, is that going to dampen the enthusiasm of private donors to give? So we have to think about it. I don't think anybody would like to see public dollars supplant private dollars. We already have a very generous United Performing Arts Fund. In an ideal world, if we were to do something with additional public dollars, that would say to the private donors, hey, now we have a set of institutions that can take care of the leaky roofs and the facades and the HVAC systems, and so our dollars are going to go towards new and exciting exhibits or the ability for the symphony to play a larger number of dates or whatever. And so I think that's what the conversation is about, and we can't tell you what the impact would be on our Performing Arts Fund if suddenly there were additional public dollars available for those very same performing arts organizations.
Mark, does the $10 million raised by UPAF, mm-hmm. Does some of that go to the to your symphony, sir?
It does. We are the largest recipient of UPAF allocation. Last year, we received $2.3 million of that 10.
But when UPAF raises 10, some of which goes to your organization, mm-hmm. does that weaken your ability to ask others to support your organization separately? Do you think UPAF efforts hurt?
It is a challenge. Do I think UPAF effort hurts us?
Hurts your fundraising.
You know, that's a much more complicated question that I could answer quickly right now.
Okay.
The United Performing Arts Fund is our largest single donor. However, what we have received from the United Performing Arts Fund has gone down by over $1 million in the last 10 years, meaning what we received 10 years ago was $1 million more than what we received last year in our annual gift. So there is... we are having a broader discussion with UPAF about our relationship with them. However, I should also report that in our time of need now, when we are in this emergency fundraising campaign, they have allocated a special gift to the symphony out of their reserve funds. It's not coming from the other arts groups, because that's political suicide for all of us, mm-hmm. To help us through this time.
Tim, as this debate evolves, do you think government leaders, city, county, state, and, well, the state includes the capital, and the people who are capable of writing big checks, will they have to pick winners and losers? We're going to give X to a new arena so we can't help Mr. Niehaus's symphony?
No, I don't think this creates winners and losers. I think what it creates, and the Public Policy Forum study has, you know, set a great baseline for this, is that the commitment, and to your point, in some cases it's our time, it's our generation, this has been an asset that's been passed on. I think that this, we need to solve from a public sector standpoint, some of these infrastructure questions, the physical assets. And then it's up to the private sector, the philanthropic sector, to invest in and support the cultural and entertainment institutions as they see fit. And so I think at the nut of the study here, it's really getting our heads around as a community, if these institutions were important to us in the past, the funding has been declining from the standpoint of the infrastructure, and are we going to just let that continue to decline, as you point out, crumble, or are we going to put a stake in the ground and say we're going to do something about it, we're going to come together as a region, and we're going to set a course for the future, which will only enhance and set up the private sector contributions.
But I've also heard you talk about these other larger needs of this area. The public schools in Milwaukee, I've heard your PowerPoint presentation, the transportation needs, the bus system runs. So where, law enforcement.
Right.
How do you balance cultural arts and entertainment, as important as they are, with these other functions and duties and obligations of government?
This is Milwaukee. The Milwaukee region is Wisconsin's only entrant in the global marketplace of world-class cities. And if we are going to play in that marketplace, and it has a lot of wonderful economic benefits that come to this community, then quite frankly, my flip answer is we can walk and chew gum at the same time. That we can do these things which enhance our quality of life while we invest in the necessary things that give people the education to participate in our economy, that support people who fall through the cracks, to do the other things that make up a world-class market.
Well, Rob,
what if we don't?
I understand, but your study kind of alludes to this.
Yep, and Steve, I think that's why we see this as a broader opportunity. I think there's a real need to think hard about how we finance local government here in the state of Wisconsin, and this is an opportunity to rethink that. What is the proper mix? We are very heavily reliant on the property tax. Municipalities and county governments are very dependent on state shared revenue. There is no local option ability to do a sales tax or to do a variety of other things. And we're not saying that the total tax burden has to rise, but might there be a better way to structure the way we finance our variety of programs? And so maybe you don't have the Performing Arts Center and the Public Museum competing against mental health programs and the jail.
Well, and what a perfect segue. This is the final subject I want to cover. Your report, there is also little question that new or enhanced dedicated public funding would be helpful and in some cases imperative in addressing these issues. Dedicated public funding, what are some examples in, I know you're going to come out in March with another study that's going to focus on how other cities have solved this issue, but give us a background understanding of dedicated public funding.
Well, the dedication part is very important here, because there's nothing to say you couldn't continue to use a property tax. The difference in a place like St. Louis that dedicates a property tax to five of its cultural institutions is that they ride with the increase or decrease in property values. So the difference here in Milwaukee County is, regardless of whether property values are going up or down, these arts and cultural institutions in the parks are competing with all of the other county services for the county budget pie, as opposed to in St. Louis, where the mill rate is set, and if property values increase 2%, then each of these institutions is going to get a 2% annual increase. So that's an important point. But there are other strategies here, and we're going to look at four other metro areas. There are uses of sales tax. Cuyahoga County, which is in Ohio, Cleveland is the major city, uses a 30-cent per pack cigarette tax to help its arts and cultural institutions. There's differences in terms of whether we're viewing this as a funding mechanism to support capital needs versus operating support versus both. So there's lots of different models to do this. I don't know that there's a right answer or a wrong answer for Milwaukee County, and we're certainly not saying necessarily that anything has to be done, but I think this will provide some valuable food for thought for Tim's committee and for the community as a whole.
Well, what about that, Tim? The concept of dedicated public funding. As you look out over all the needs of this community, dedicated public funding for arts, culture, entertainment.
Yeah, I think, again, the Public Policy Forum has set a great table for this discussion. Wisconsin puts all of its eggs in two baskets, personal income and property. And I think what we're talking about is this an opportunity, as Rob points out, to look at how we fund local government and how we fund our needs on a metropolitan basis. And I think it's smart to look at other markets that have resolved this issue, at least on a more stable basis than Milwaukee has. And so I think one of the things we should look at is, you know, dedicated funding, possibly through a sales tax or other mechanisms. But I think there's also other options in addition to that that will surface. But this is a discussion we have to have. We have to bring to it to a conclusion, and we have to take action. And if that action is, we're not going to look at another way to do this, we are going to continue this slow decline, then let's make that purposeful decision and live with it. If we're going to go the other route, then let's get behind it and move it. This making decision by not making a decision is what bothers, I think, all of us.
The concept of public funding to the orchestra?
I think we're going to, I like the sales tax idea.
You do?
I do.
And you also talk about a temporary infusion of public funding. Do you see something that's only in existence 2-3 years to stabilize funding sources for organizations like these?
That's certainly one option, and that is the Cuyahoga County model. They actually tried to do a broader, more permanent funding source for arts and culture that was rejected the first time it was tried by voters, and so they opted instead to do a more limited funding source that voters were promised, because the state statute put it this way, that after 8 years, the cigarette tax is going to go away. So that was essentially an acknowledgement that, hey, we need to bring all of these organizations and facilities, there's a public interest in bringing them up to snuff. We're going to try to do that, but then they're going to be on their own again.
Okay, two final questions. And Rob, all of you, what's it going to take? What's the next crisis or trigger that will force action on some of these cultural arts and entertainment funding? I mean, will it be the $82 million that the parks need, or will it be the zoo? Thoughts?
Well, you know, I think the symphony struggles have certainly opened a lot of people's eyes. We haven't seen that happen with the publicly owned institutions. We did a little bit. There was an emergency deal just in the past year for both our public museum and our War Memorial Center. So I don't know if there's going to be one defining moment. Clearly, okay. The deadline of the Bucks is going to, I think, stir this conversation.
How is your public appeal? Keep the music playing. Has it
we are
a reception?
We have had a tremendous outpouring of support from the community.
Yeah.
Yes, it's been really, it is risky to go with a Save the Symphony campaign in the public. We have received an unbelievable outpouring of support because people understand that we have a world-class orchestra here.
And then, Tim, final question maybe for you. What's the timeline for some potential funding mechanism for a new arena for the Bucks, an expansion of the convention center? Are we a year out from seeing some recommendations, 9 months, 12?
Well, I think it's clearly after the November elections, and I don't mean to be a bit jaded about that. But I think what this discussion leads up to is, you know, we can sit on the sidelines with the paddles and wait for the patient's heart rate to flatline, and then we can jump in and try to start it. Or we can build on the Public Policy Forum's work and do something more thoughtful and do it ahead of a crisis. Now, I don't want to waste a good crisis, but I don't want to wait for one to occur that makes this so difficult to do. So I would say that these decisions are going to come to a head in the next 18 months.
Excellent.
I also think there needs to be thoughtfulness and open-mindedness about this. We already have some communities that, before they even know what we're talking about, are saying they're not going to participate. And I find that troublesome, because this is a thoughtful community.
Which is the reason that Wisconsin and I is here today. And when's your next report coming out? March?
Mid-March.
We're going to come back and interview you then.
Great.
Thanks very much. A fascinating subject. I want to thank Rob Hinken, Mark Niehaus, and Tim Sheehy. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.